Today's show, way too early, top 25, although we don't get through all of them. What is the ACC proposing with this championship game? And is an elephant a human?
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
This reminds me of my dating life many years ago. I'd be like, you're not even allowed to ask me to dinner.
Russ Dellinger.
What are you talking about, baby? Oh, you know, I don't.
And SI's Pat Forty.
Hey, there's something wrong with Alabama football. We might as well blame it on the wing choices.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
Welcome to the pod, and it's that time of year, folks. Smart people like Pat Forty engage in the way too early college football top 25 lists, which we will etch into stone and then mock you relentlessly when you're not accurate.
There you go. That's why these lists exist, basically.
How dare you be wrong? They also started putting out point spreads for games next year. These are just like these publicity-minded sites. Like, can you actually gamble on this? I don't believe that's true.
I don't know.
Someone was like, "Oh, Ohio State's a 9.5 point favorite over Michigan in the game next year in Ann Arbor." I'm like, "What? Okay, maybe."
Yeah.
Let alone week one. Week one is crazy enough, but I'm like, really?
Enough to put a line on the season opener. So that the season enders.
Like, do we know who's injured for that game?
Do we know who the team will be? I mean, the transfer portal is the thing now.
Listen, you know? Logic has no place, and we're going to feed that beast because Pat Forty's got it all wrong. Would you have Indiana ranked last year, Pat, if you're so smart? Anyway, we got the SI thing here, so let's mock it. It's that time of year. Number one, Texas Longhorns, according to Pat.
I had company with others.
Brian Fisher's
diffusing
in on this.
The blame. Yes,
Mike McDaniel and Zach Coons are all in on this.
Yeah.
Well, I'm putting it all on you. Texas Longhorns, number one, Arch Manning. So I'm intrigued at this. Texas seems to be the everyone's in the way too early community that Pat lives in. Guess you all seem to agree on this. Obviously, look, two straight Final Fours. They got a ton of players. And they have Arch. And everyone could be like, Arch hasn't done anything. Wait till you get through this list. A lot of the quarterbacks haven't done anything. So and if you watched college football last year, you noticed there were not a lot of great quarterbacks of any age. I was reminded, I think we talked about this in the pod, like we had national championship games between Joe Burrow versus Trevor Lawrence, like number one pick and number one pick, and not because there's no one else.
Right.
God bless Riley Leonard and Will Howard, but I'm not seeing that going 1-1 the next couple of years. Anyway, Texas Longhorns, Arch. So I don't think we got to say a whole lot. I mean, they got Wisner's back and Ryan Wingo and Anthony Hill. I mean, they got all sorts of guys. Is the Arch Manning hype train just going to be out of control this summer? And A, that's question A. And B, how much are we going to contribute recklessly and irresponsibly to it?
Yes, and a lot. I mean, what the hell are we doing here on this podcast if we're not contributing recklessly to the Arch Manning buildup? I believe it when he was a senior in high school, we have briefly declared ourselves the Arch Manning podcast, you know, because we were waiting to see where he was going to go to.
We did.
Where he was going to go to college. So we need some follow up now that he's actually going to play.
We once did an entire segment because we got the Freedom of Information Act came out recruiting expenses on the weekend he visited Texas. We did an entire segment asking because one bar tab had one shot of Johnny Walker Blue, which if you're not knowledgeable on the Johnny Walker family of whiskeys, well, are you really living? Are you really living? But B, that would be the real, that's the Jerry Jones level. That's the Jerry Jones level. And we said, you know, I think we did a breakdown on the odds that it was Cooper Manning that ordered that. So that's High how odds. Deep we were. High that's odds. How deep we were. We were breaking down bar tabs from yes. recruiting weekends and placing it on Cooper.
Absolutely. And
if it wasn't him, why not? So, yes. What is Pat? Is I mean Heisman? I mean, that's not even a question, right? Of course he is. He could win the Super Bowl next year too.
Of course. If he doesn't, there's something went wrong. But, I talked to Kirk Bowles when we were at the championship game, who's covered Texas since the earth cooled. Seen it all down there. Great guy. And we're like, you know, is the Arch buildup real? He said, yeah, I think so. I think he's really that good. And he's probably paid more attention to it than most of the rest of us have and has seen a lot of great quarterbacks over the years down there. So he's very bullish on the expectations for Arch. I think everyone is. They need to rebuild their offensive line. Any quarterback can look suboptimal behind a bad offensive line, but it's hard to believe Texas would have a bad offensive line, just maybe a young one or one that needs to come together a little bit. But between Arch's athleticism and the passing ability that we've been able to see, which hasn't been a ton, and the, you know, the maturity level and everything else, I think the expectation is he steps in and is immediately one of the very best quarterbacks in the country. I mean, to your point, Dan, of who are the best quarterbacks, Carson Beck had a pretty disappointing year, and he became the biggest thing the portal had ever seen going to Miami. So that tells you the market is still, I think, a little bit soft. We had the unbelievable quarterback year in 2023. We had a down quarterback year in 2024. TBD in 2025, but it's open at the top, and Arch could end up there.
You know, the hype for Arch, right, stretches back, I don't know, a long, long time. I can recall going to cover one of his games in New Orleans to write an SI story, I think it was his freshman year. And it's crazy to a freshman in high school year. And it's crazy to think that here we are, finally, he's going to be a starter, that it took this long to get to this point, because he was arguably the most hyped up quarterback, high school quarterback I'd ever seen, probably as early as I'd ever seen. And obviously it has a lot to do with his name, but I remember standing right there on the sideline, and as a high school freshman, him just, you know, shredding the other team. And I just will never forget standing on the sideline, and then the opposing cornerback that was like guarding the receiver was right in front of me. And at some point during one of the plays, after Arch made one of the plays, the cornerback looks over to like the down marker guy, who I was standing next to, and was like, is this guy serious? Like, what are we doing? Like, what can we do? You know, it was like a cornerback from the other team. So Arch has been good, and the hype's been there for a long time. And it is crazy that finally it's arrived. And you know, it's just going to be a more and more buildup here. As Pat said, there's probably a lot of pieces around him, specifically offensive line, that needs to get ironed out a little bit for the Longhorns.
Obviously, we saw him run, saw some passes. I thought, you know, now that it's over, they really did an incredible job handling these last 2 years. Credit to Sarkisian, Quinn Ewers, wearing it, making a joke in a Dr. Pepper commercial. I mean, we had the two games where Ewers was out, he came back. There was plenty of, I was at the Clemson playoff game, and they brought Arch in to run a play. And I mean, the crowd got really excited, and there's no doubt there was plenty of people like, we'd win it all if we had Arch. There's, you know, they really did a good job with that, but no more. We'll see. I don't know. Well, it's going to be good or not. I assume.
And also Arch and the Mannings did a good job with it too.
Yeah.
You know, they were patient. Yeah. Didn't yeah. cause any problems, didn't hit the portal, any of that stuff.
Well, that, you know, that yeah. that story I was just referring to when I went down to New Orleans to write the story on Arch, you know, the family wouldn't talk to me, you know, and they were nice about it. They were just like, we're not going to talk, you know. Now they talked to me privately off the record a little bit, especially Archie did, and gave me some good insight, but they didn't want to talk, and they spent most of his recruiting like that. If you guys remember, yeah, I remember us talking about it, right? They didn't accept any offers. Remember, LSU was like one of the first ones that wanted to make an offer, and Cooper Manning and, you know, Arch and them were like, no, we're not accepting offers, so you can't make an offer. So that's how they treated the recruiting.
Like a scholarship offer?
Right. An offer to go to school. And they're like, we're not accepting any offers, basically. And Orgeron told me the story. They were on a golf cart. Of course, they were on a golf cart driving around practice, and he offered him, and Arch was like, I'm not accepting any offers. And I'm sure Orgeron was like, what the hell are you talking about? You know,
how do you turn down an offer?
You know?
Yeah. Usually, like in the current climate, anytime a kid gets an offer, it's on social media in five minutes.
Like, and they stayed away from social too, if you guys remember. Totally. Like Arch, for the most part, stayed away from it. They treated the recruiting process unlike anything, you know, like the old days. Like you didn't hear about it, and they didn't talk about it. It was really interesting. And I think they kind of treated, as to Pat's point, in a lot of ways, they've treated his early tenure at Texas that way too. They're just not a ton of talking. I remember doing an interview. It was last Sugar Bowl. It was a semifinal with Cooper. And this, you know, he did talk to me for it, and it like blew up. It's one of the things he said was like, all these NIL numbers, none of them are right. And that quote kind of took off, because they just don't talk very, very often. And I think it's kind of paid off in a lot of ways. I think they've handled, everything's kind of going pretty smoothly for the most part.
It's amazing, considering the family literally talks nonstop about everything and always has. I mean, I love them. I covered both of them.
Archie's great. Archie was talking about everything.
Archie talked about anything. I once ran into Archie at a Denver Bronco playoff game. He's wandering. Peyton's playing, obviously. He's wandering the back hallway behind like the some of the luxury boxes and press thing, listening on the radio. And he's like, I'm too nervous to watch the game. And he talked to me like, he gave me some quotes then. Like one time at the Super Bowl, Cooper Manning, when they played, I can't remember what one was. They didn't play each other, but they were in there. Cooper Manning got his own transcript from the NFL. He wasn't even in the league. I mean, these guys are the best. They're absolutely the best to the media. They were the best, and now they're in the media, and they're the best. Yeah. I mean, their show is great. But yeah, they would not say a word. I don't know how you turn down an offer. This reminds me of my dating life many years ago. I'd be like, you're not even allowed to ask me to dinner. Don't even ask me, let alone I will say no. Do not talk to me. So I got Ed Orgeron and I got something in common there. Don't even bother, man. I'm not accepting your offer. Wow. All right.
It's a bizarre way to handle it.
It worked, though.
But, you know, during that process of that story, I remember getting Archie on the phone and like we talked, he just talked to me, but I couldn't quote him at all, really. Right. And he was always like, don't tell Coop I talked to you. Don't tell him I talked to you. Okay. Like, okay. All right. You know, that's how they did it.
Worked.
Archie's cute. He's funny. I remember during the pandemic, hearing when before I, you know, Arch was maybe going to be a junior or something. Archie would drive his car down to Isidore Newman practice. Couldn't go in, but he would like get where he could see over the fence or through the fence and watch practice. I mean, that's a proud grandpa, given the lineage there. He's still very invested in how the family's doing.
Yeah. How come none of them ever went to LSU?
Great question.
Yeah, very good question. Yeah, I mean, for a while,
Let's start a feud. They have four Mannings.
Yeah.
I know.
Three of them grew up in the state. I mean, I get Archie from Drew, Mississippi, right? But yeah, LSU never got a shot with those guys.
No, and when I was covering LSU there as a beat writer, and that was a big storyline. Can we break the streak and get Arch? And there was a lot of confidence that, you know, they could do that. And if you guys remember, I think Arch was probably maybe a junior in high school when LSU won the 19 national title, maybe even earlier than that. He might have been a sophomore.
And produced the number one pick in the draft.
Right, and Burrow was there, and Joe Brady, and all this stuff. Yeah. It's like if the staff had probably kept together, there was a real chance they may have gotten him. Of course, Joe Brady went to the NFL and, yeah, and all that, so everything, yeah, kind of broke apart.
Yeah. Well, I encourage all parents to do the Manning bit, but actually talk to the media. But, I mean, this is how you do it. They,
yeah,
patience and – go ahead, Pat.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they never – I mean, obviously, they've been playing the long game all along, which is always smart. You know, the urge to rush your kid into some level of stardom or accomplishment before they're probably ready to handle it is strong and generally not healthy. And they understand the sport better than anybody. So I think they had a very good perspective on what it's like to be a star quarterback and, you know, when you need to try to push a star quarterback to be a star quarterback and all that. And, you know, getting caught up in the hype and all that stuff. I mean, I don't know whether Arch has ever posted another tweet other than the one that just said hook 'em and announced his intention to go to Texas, but they have never gotten caught up in the game that surrounds the game. So good for them.
They also, I don't think he did many of the camps, if any.
Yeah.
He also stayed at Isidore Newman High School where his dad, you know, Peyton and Eli went, and that's a small, right, Ross, that is a small division school. You're not playing the Edna Carrs and all these other, you know, all the powerhouse high school football in Louisiana, which is incredible. It is a small school. You're not playing with great talent, and they didn't care. Now, you get that advantage when your name's Manning, and you have that, you know, it's not like you got to hype your kid. Everyone was talking about him anyway, but it wasn't, we're going to switch three high schools, switch states, find a place, all this stuff, which people do. The other advantage is, you know, they're not chasing NIL money because they, like, he'll just do a Caesars commercial. I mean, you know, they have the money, which also helps. Not everyone has that advantage, but they had him play multiple sports and believed in this way, and we're going to find out. And this is not a family that's afraid to throw elbows. I mean, like, they were patient at Ole Miss with Eli. He redshirted and then barely played as his second year, much like Arch. But when it was time to be a top pick, they weren't letting him go to the Chargers. So it's not like they just sit back passively either.
Right. You know, the NFL, when it's time to go to the NFL, things may be a little bit different, you know. But I think they were trying to make sure that Arch still remained a kid for as long as possible. We're now reaching the point where he's going to be a starting quarterback at Texas, and things are going to change. We'll see. The Dan Wetzel epic athletes on Arch Manning can answer the question why he never went to LSU.
Well, you know, we have the Caitlin Clark coming out in the spring. Yeah, pre-orders are available right now.
Are the footballs all gone, I hope?
Oh, yeah. What's going on with the footballs?
Selling like hotcakes, of course.
Oh, my God.
Of course. Nyko Sports and the footballs are going Ohio State commemorative football. You know, all the Ohio State fans should be excited and, you know,
Sports relive. Illustrated has a commemorative issue for Ohio State fans. It's better than a football.
Ha! Is it? Is it?
Yes. Yes. There's a lot of great content
in my
there.
NIL deal, I got a complimentary football. And who am I sending it to? Who? I put the order in yesterday. Who's getting it, Ross? Coach Dell. Coach Dell is getting it. Even though he's a Notre Dame fan.
My wife or my mom will be thrilled when it arrives at the house and we have nowhere to put it.
Oh no, front center on the mantle. On the mantle.
Yeah, that's right. Front and center is Ohio State football from Dan Wetzel.
A guy in Biloxi, Mississippi. Mama Dell's
going to be like, why do we have an Ohio State football? We don't care about Ohio State.
We live in Biloxi, Mississippi, and we don't root for Ohio State. Doesn't matter. This thing is, that's how pretty it is.
Oh, Lord.
That's how pretty it is. Listen,
why the did footballs I bring it
up? They're rolling off the only 10,000, so get them before the limited edition. Listen, those are good guys over there at Nyko Sports. They recognize influencers very well.
That's what it is.
Everyone hates. I'm getting roasted, but I don't care. NIL for all. NIL for all. Somebody said so I lost my journalistic credibility because of it. I was like, are we really?
Pat, I've gotten so many texts about us giving Dan a hard time on the about this. People just love it.
Oh, well,
so let's just keep. Yeah, we just keep on riffing away.
Part of the appeal. Part of the appeal.
I did get a text from somebody congratulating us on giving him "quote unquote" unending.
Yeah. Yeah. Perfect.
Listen. When I'm just peeling out the money out of my wallet because of this football, I'm not going to hear you. I can't hear you. Too much money. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Too much cash, paper.
Anyway.
Buckeyes, number two.
Buckeyes, number two.
Lost a ton, but you still believe in them. They, as we mentioned the last thing, they have a few guys like Jeremiah Smith and Caleb Downs coming back. Julian Sayin seems to be the buzz. You talk to people at Ohio State, he's the guy that's going to win this quarterback. This quarterback battle, perhaps, but they also have Tavian St. Clair coming in, who's another massive five-star recruit, and he's going to be a true freshman. So there will be a battle. I don't know. Is Air Norland still there? Did he take off? Devin Brown just transferred. Okay, yeah, Air Norland left to South Carolina, and Devin Brown went to Cal.
Yep.
The Ohio State QB room is like better than IMG Academy. Like they're going to start getting, recruiting mail from other schools just delivered to the QB room. It's just, hey, listen, man, you ain't playing over him, but I don't see them hitting the portal for a Will Howard anytime soon. I mean, they had Quinn Ewers and everybody goes there. Do you have to commit? Raiola was committed.
Yeah.
Man. It's a prerequisite for a top QB. You must commit to Ohio State, at least at some point. Anyway, what do you got, Pat?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to lose a ton, obviously, because they kept all those guys for that extra year. It worked perfectly. There will be rebuilding, I think, especially defensively, front seven for sure, defensive line. But there's going to be a ton of talent. They have the best offensive player in the country and the best defensive player in the country. That's a decent place to start. Right? Fill in around there. We'll see if Sayin steps up. Carnell Tate's a really good wide receiver, but he was playing with Jeremiah Smith and with Egbuka. Egbuka leaves now. He steps up into that number two role. They're still going to be very explosive in the passing game. They got C.J. Donaldson transferred from West Virginia, running back. Mac Clair transferred tight end from Purdue. So I am not sitting here worried about Ohio State's talent. It's more going to be experience and pulling pieces together.
Dan, I have trouble with the players that are currently on the roster, let alone projecting who's going to be in the roster. And September, I'm going to let Pat, take
that's
that
why
one.
I went with Pat.
His
statement stands. Well,
I'll sign on to his statement.
These are hard when you new things now.
It's absurd.
That's why it's the way too early. That's why we're putting it on Pat, right? If the Buckeyes aren't number two, then he's a total failure. It's tricky. You don't know the depth. Also, in the past, you could sit there and be like, oh, Alabama's losing three of their linebackers. You're like, yeah, they're going to have three linebackers. I'm not worried. Like, you just knew because of the way the recruiting worked. Now, that isn't really the case anymore. And you watch Georgia not be like, did you ever think Georgia would be like, boy, their line play on both sides of the ball isn't any good. That isn't up to, like, I haven't worried about Georgia's line play in a long time. I'll just say this about this. This is how you navigate not knowing anything, Ross.
Yeah.
I'll give you a little lesson in podcasting. Just find some other little fact and then that's it. Just go with that. So we would open the season in Columbus, Ohio. If Pat is correct, Saturday, August 30th, I'm going to guess primetime. Number one, Texas visits number two, Ohio State. Have we ever opened the season with a 1-2? I didn't do that much research. Yeah. That would have been a good thing to look up.
Research? What?
I've been selling footballs here, people.
Yeah.
No, I haven't done anything. My duties are done. I did my tweets. That's the thing about the influence. You just walk away. Walk away. Let me take you into my world.
2016 Alabama and Florida State played in Atlanta.
1-3.
Was it 1-3? Okay.
All pretty right. sure that was a 1-3.
Yeah.
And Florida State was never the same.
No.
That was they were an overrated three at that point.
Yeah, I think they had injury to their QB. And
DeAndre Francois, right at the end of the game.
Yeah, yeah, it was a tough one. Well, this would be pretty, it's a pretty sweet way to start it. Plus, it's like, was that in Tallahassee or was that a one of those neutral
sites? No, it was in Atlanta.
Yeah, yeah. Saban wouldn't do that. He would do those neutral sites.
Yeah.
This will be like, I mean, that's an unbelievable start to the season. Ohio State fans back. There are going to be 30,000 Texas fans in that one, although they'll try.
Yeah, they'll try.
All those Ohio State. No, I didn't sell my tickets.
Yeah.
No, I didn't put those on StubHub for Tennessee fans. Yeah. Nah, yeah. I haven't missed a home game in 33 years.
Yeah. Yeah. I've never said a bad word about Ryan Day.
That's right. We knew all along we were fine. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've had Ohio State fans trying to do revisionist history on that. There was no more than 10,000 mm-hmm. Tennessee fans there. Oh, bull crap.
Or they're blaming it like the media was hammering Ryan Day. Like, the media, we were.
Always the media fault. Absolutely.
I was on the field. I heard the boos. It was bad.
Pat got damn pepper sprayed.
I got pepper sprayed on behalf of that team.
Yeah. Dan. Yeah. a lot of good season openers, like highly ranked. Season openers next year. How about LSU at Clemson next year to begin the season? And how about Notre Dame at Miami next year? So
LSU is the 11 versus 6. Clemson is 6. We'll get to them, I guess. Mm-hmm. See how long this segment goes.
Sure.
Yeah. And then what, Miami? I don't know. What'd you have that, Pat?
Like 10? 10, maybe? 10?
Miami was 10, and Notre Dame is our next pick. No, Penn State's our next pick. Notre Dame is 4. We'll get to those ones. We'll try to get through the top 10 here. Penn State, you got 3. But yes, the opener will be great, which is good because it'll give us something to talk about in the middle of the summer.
Yeah,
Penn State, Nittany Lions, number 3. What's your problem? Why aren't they 1?
I mean, I could make a case for 1. I really could.
You hate the Nittany Lions?
I do.
Yeah,
yeah, inherently. That's a sign of that. I could absolutely make a case for them number 1. It's just can they, you know, they've got to show they can beat Ohio State first.
Yeah. Who's going to catch the ball too?
Right, they need to go out and get a wide receiver in the portal for sure. But they brought back Drew Aller, they brought back Nick Singleton, they brought back Catron Allen, they brought back Zane Durant, Dennis Sutton, Zakee Wheatley on defense. They obviously lose 2 first-round guys in Abdul Carter and Tyler Warren, and they do need receivers, and they need a coach who can beat Ohio State. We'll see if they can pull those things together. But, I mean, I love what Penn State has done as far as preparing itself for next season.
I believe it's day 9, Dennis Sutton.
Oh, yeah. All right. There we go.
We have a guy who sends me the Penn State pronunciation list every time because we're getting that wrong. It's good spelled to know. D-A-N-I, so I forgive
you. We mostly type for a living, so we try to get the spelling right.
Spell pronunciation. That's not our thing. Yeah. But thank you, George Kovach. He sends me the pronunciation list.
What would we do without him?
We would mispronounce his
name. We get him wrong.
Listen, I don't Dennis Sutton, I'll just go with the second part. I don't want him mad at
me. There you go. No, he's a mean dude. Woo.
Yeah, he's a big dude. Anyway, Penn State. I could be 1.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Get some receivers 1, you know?
Right. And they lose Tyler Warren, too. I mean,
right.
Yeah.
So that's a receiver, but they've got a lot coming back.
Can Drew Aller in some of these big games, right? Can he play better, Brad? There's some doubt there. We saw some issues, obviously, in a few of the big games late from him. Can he actually do it and get over the hump? And, you know, Ohio State's the big one. And it's just going to stick with them. Can they beat the Buckeyes in the playoff too, right? It reminds me of when I spent time in Baton Rouge covering LSU, and it reminds me of the streak against Alabama that LSU had, right? It's in the conference. Basically, the only thing standing in the way between them in a conference championship type dynasty and even the national championship, there's just one team in your conference that's kind of blocking you from all of that. And that's what it reminds me of. So, and at some point it becomes mental too. Maybe we're there with Ohio State and Michigan. I don't know, but it does remind me of that back in the days with LSU and Alabama.
Well, they do have they have to travel to Ohio State. They get Oregon visiting also. So, but no Michigan because they got to block against them too a little bit. We'll be back with more of the rankings after this. All right, number four. I can make this case. I actually think this is a team who should be number one. Hot yep. take. Will this be the pullout that they put on, like, they hype up on, like, our YouTube feed to try to track? It's Notre Dame. Should they be number one? The Fighting Irish. Obviously, they lose a lot of great players, but the offensive line is mostly back, as I understand it. Yep. Riley Leonard is gone, but Steve Angeli and CJ Carr should have a good quarterback. And again, you go, well, these guys done anything other than Aller, who we look talking about here. Right. And I like how Marcus Freeman's freshmen and sophomores have delivered. Great House. They come back as one of the top preseason All-American as a receiver. I mean, Ohio State could not cover him.
Right.
And they got a lot of guys that can cover. So nobody could cover them in the whole playoffs. So I think Notre Dame as a number one is totally legit.
Big defensive coordinator loss, but
they did lose.
I'm sure they'll find a good defensive coordinator, right? Notre Dame, I'm sure will find a good defensive coordinator. But yeah, you gotta look at that. Al Golden off to the Bengals, right?
This team dealt with so many injuries to get to that championship. Also, this was not one of those seasons where everything fell into place for Notre Dame. So, Pat, why do you hate Notre Dame?
If this had been a solo pick, I probably would have put them number one. I would have. I mean, I love them for this year. They need a quarterback. They don't need a great quarterback. They didn't have a great quarterback last year. Riley Leonard was very good and very effective in what they wanted to do, but he didn't, like, overwhelm opponents. But they 14 of their starters from the championship game are back, and that was an injured game team in the championship game. They had playing a lot of backups. There's some of the injured guys are coming back as well. Their freshman class, redshirt and true, was incredible. I don't think there was a better freshman class in the country in terms of actual production and what these guys were able to do. So, like, four or five guys on defense, a couple of guys on offense. Jeremiah Love was a sophomore. He was excellent. They are stacked, I believe. Make sure one of the quarterbacks comes through. Make sure your defensive coordinator hire is good. Build out some depth. Notre Dame's going to be right there.
Yeah, you'd expect them to not have that big of a drop-off. Obviously, the big replacement duty for me would be the quarterback, as we don't know a ton about these two. We know they're... I mean, CJ Carr was pretty highly rated, obviously. Angelo, we saw him in spurts in a huge game against Penn State, playoff game, look really, really good. But that was a small sample size. And I'm sure they'll get a good defensive coordinator. I don't know that any power conference defensive coordinator job has produced lately like Notre Dame's has. Take the last few Notre Dame defensive coordinators, Marcus Freeman, Clark Lee, Mike Elko. They all have power conference head coaching jobs. So I would think they'll be able to land a good one and that the defense will, again, be one of the best in the country.
Yeah. We'll see how many people leave. We're a couple days out. I know there's just, I think, one offensive lineman. I mean, they can still transfer portal now. We'll see. I imagine there'll be a QB battle through spring ball and that. Maybe that produces, but there some attrition. But Notre Dame kids tend to be fired up for Notre Dame. I'm putting a lot of faith. Marcus Freeman had another good top 10 recruiting class. I'm putting a lot of faith in their ability to find game breakers that aren't five stars because he's done that the last couple of years. And so maybe that's some good fortune, or maybe that's a little better recruiting. But I don't know what. like it's, let me look at, I'll look up Great House as a recruit, but, he, you know, like he was a big recruit. Actually not, I mean, he's a 4-star, but like the 44th best receiver in the country.
Wow. He's a lot better than that.
He's not a top 200 guy. Let me look at another site. Let me see. I should really just look at that class. But I mean, Jeremiah Love, what was he? Rivals had him as 107th nationally. So, but you know, that's not Jeremiah Smith number one.
Right.
Right. And so you go, okay, this kid's, you know, you're the 107th. This kid's really good. So they're coaching him, they're motivating him. Irish number one. I'm going to pick everyone number one. Then they're all the fan base going to like me and hate Pat.
Yeah, there we go. This is a Dick Vitale top 25 for you. There's like 37 teams in it.
Before they started bringing in Joe Lunardi to do the thing on ESPN, the bubble watch and all that, like they would just have Vitale do it. He'd have like I remember somebody in college basketball. Vitale's got 78 teams in his tournament. Yeah. Oh yeah. Like, this is not fair. The committee was so mad because Vitale was just sailing everyone. They're in.
Yeah.
They're in.
Did you leave them out?
Yeah.
What's up, baby? I've had them in for a month.
It's like you got too many teams here. The math isn't mathing, man. Number 5, Oregon Ducks. Obviously had this incredible season, and it all just came undone so fast in that Rose Bowl. I don't know how Oregon fans process or how they'll remember the season, because it really was the best season. I don't know. I mean, they made a championship game once. Maybe the best, one of the best seasons in the history of the Oregon Ducks, and it just ended with got to be a little bitter. Dylan Gabriel is gone, but they are recruiting at an incredible level, and the portal. DeCorian Moore as a wide receiver is incredible. He's coming in. He made this incredible catch in one of those high school All-American games. Did you see this thing he caught? He did like an Odell Beckham catch while double covered.
Really?
And it was so exciting. For some reason, Travis Hunter was there. Travis Hunter ran out and tried to like tackle him. He was so excited. And they both wiped out. It looked like literally like the $400 million in NFL salary almost got wiped out celebrating a high school all-star game. You guys see this video. QB though, they have Dante Moore, and Dante Moore was a 5-star recruit that went to UCLA, played a season for Chip Kelly, was not great, but was not bad either. He just looked like a freshman at an overwhelmed UCLA program, then redshirted this year and now takes over. Like, that's a pretty promising, if you're going to step somebody in, he has high major experience and is highly regarded. So and Gabriel showed you can kind of plug and play at that program. He's an excellent player. So I don't know, what do you think of Oregon, Pat?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's one of those programs now you really don't expect to take big steps back because the recruiting prowess of Dan Lanning, whether it's freshman or whether it's in the portal, they get guys. So you got Moore, you've got 2,000-yard career rusher Noah Whittington, you got a 1,700-yard career receiver Evan Stewart, who used to play at Texas A&M. As you mentioned, you got DeCorian Moore coming in as probably, you know, the number one receiver in the country. Defensively, they got a great linebacker core. They brought in, I think, an underrated safety in Dylan Thienemann from Purdue. We'll see how the rest of it comes together. Line play, obviously, and Dante Moore has to step up and play. But Will Stein's an excellent offensive coordinator, and I think they will have a user-friendly system for Dante Moore to step into.
Well, they're recruiting, as you guys mentioned, that a very, very high level, right? Usually when you talk to folks in the collective world, they'll point to Ohio State and Oregon as two of the ones doing it very well. Joe sent this, I think, a few days ago, maybe yesterday, I don't know, my days are running together, to us on the group message about Oregon, that it'll be recognized in the NCAA record books as a national champion because the NCAA, includes a mathematical ranking among its national champion selections, like the AP, the coaches, and they include this this national ranking. So congratulations, Oregon. Peter Wolf's mathematical rankings national champion. How about that?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the first national champion to be behind 34-0 in the second quarter of the Rose Bowl.
That's not actually not true. There was one year, I think, like Alabama claimed one, and they lost a few games.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, I mean, so maybe the mathematical ranking that got that one.
Yeah, these rankings, just for those who are interested, apparently here is this ranking. Number one is Oregon with a 9.59. rating. Ohio State is 2 at 9.33.
See, makes perfect sense.
I know, will right? And then Notre Dame, Penn State, Georgia, Texas, Indiana, Boise State, BYU ranked number 9, and Illinois ranked 10. That rounds out the top 10. I'd said all year, I think actually Illinois and BYU, but I certainly talked a lot about BYU, that they were one of the ones that for some reason weren't having conversation around the bubble and should have been.
Yeah, they should have. They got a little. They got a little spice there. They could make an argument.
Well, the Scott Wolf rankings are exactly why we cannot just have some analytic we cannot have an analytic dude pump out the selections for the.
No,
for the
but I wouldn't mind playoff. An analytic dude on the committee.
You can have one on the committee. Just don't say this formula will decide everything, because sometimes these formulas are ridiculous.
I'd rather that than the sports writer. No offense to Kelly Whiteside? I mean, sports writer, they always put I don't know what that was about. Nothing wrong
with that. That was a Kelly. Bill Hancock thing, I'm
yeah,
sure.
Nothing wrong with Kelly or whoever's you, doing it now. But I don't, a retired sports writer? Like, believe me, we don't know anything. Zero. I would love some analytic guys on there just to watch like Kirby Smart's head blow or Lane Kiffin's complaints. Yeah. All right. So we're trying to get through the top 25. We've gone like, we made it to five.
That ain't going
to
happen. Five. Unless
we're going to table this to the rest. Yeah. I don't know if Ross, you see this, which one of these spicy, there's some takes here. Clemson 6. Georgia 7, Alabama 8, Illinois 9, which actually makes a lot of sense. These make sense. Miami 10, LSU 11, Arizona State 12, Tennessee 13, South Carolina 14, BYU 15, it goes on. We'll talk more about these teams. We're gonna milk this thing for a little while.
It's January, man. What else are we going to do?
I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
But any of those merit a quick note? Are you're bullish on the Illini, Pat?
Oh yeah,
rankings.
I was not the one driving the bus on Illinois, but I like Illinois. I mean, there's no reason not to. They had a very good season. Bielema, we all know, is a good coach. I think they've, you know, kind of gotten it together there in terms of being able to get enough players to fill holes when they have them. Luke Altmaier's really good quarterback and is back for another season. I think this will be year 3 starting there. So I like their chances. USC and Ohio State come to Champaign.
Yeah.
And the rest of the schedule, I mean, winnable. I think that, rest of the schedule is not super difficult. So schedule and returning talent and Bielema, sure, why not?
Yeah, their road games are at Duke, at Indiana, at Washington, at Wisconsin. So that one's interesting, yeah. And I think LSU's got a chance too, so they might be my...
LSU could...
I know that's coming out of nowhere, but Nussmeier might be the best quarterback coming back. Yeah. Someone's going to yell at me for that. Is it? Am I forgetting somebody? Someone's going to be like, you idiot, what about this guy? Oh, right. Anyway.
And they did a good job in the portal too. Yeah, I mean LSU would probably been top 6-7, I think, preseason for me. Because the portal was one of the better ones we've seen at Halls, and knowing they've got Nussmeier, the staff I think is pretty stable. You know, they bring back most of everybody, so there's a lot of hype. Big surprise, a lot of hype in Baton Rouge. So we'll see what that means.
All right, we'll be back right after this. All right, again, we'll do 6 through 10 next time or something. I don't know. We'll get to you. Long off season, man. long off season, but we got to talk about this. ACC Commissioner Jim Phillips mentioned that the ACC might consider holding its conference championship game between the second and third place teams. So if you win the regular season crown, you don't have to play in the conference championship. You play the second and third place against each other. And so you have a regular season champion, then you have a conference tournament or postseason championship. This would be maybe if they do automatic bids, or is this better as a way to protect your number one and give a better chance to get a second team in? It makes total sense in terms of trying to get extra teams into the playoff, no matter the format. However, I don't know how you have a conference championship game without the champion. Yeah. But
you
hey,
can't call
it's
it a
college
conference
football.
Championship game. Yeah, you can't.
Make it make sense, Ross.
This is something, remember, we discussed maybe 6 weeks ago or so, because this reimagined conference championship weekend is something that's been bantered about because of the proposal that was introduced last spring by the Big Ten that we've discussed a lot on the show, obviously, is multiple automatic qualifiers for a single conference. The original proposal last spring was 3 AQs for the Big Ten and SEC each, and then 2 for the ACC and Big 12, and then 1 for the G5, and so on. And in that kind of format, multiple AQ format, you render conference championship games a little less valuable. And so there is thought of a reimagined conference championship weekend where if you have 4 AQs, you know, then you're maybe your first 2 AQs, like the SEC champion and the SEC runner-up, does go to the playoff and gets their playoff bids. But the 3rd and 4th seed have to play their way in. And the 3rd plays the 6th seed, and the 4th plays the 5th seed in the SEC for a play-in game into the champion, into the playoff. And then if you're the ACC or Big 12, and you have 2 automatic qualifiers, obviously, maybe you send your champion on, and then your 2nd and 3rd seed play their way in. Or maybe you don't send your champion on, and your 1 seed plays your 4. And your 2 plays your 3 on that championship weekend. So kind of like a play-in style tournament, kind of like a basketball, you know, kind of like conference basketball tournaments a little bit, playing into the championship. I was stunned when I saw that Jim Phillips publicly commented on this. Again, we have talked about it. It's been written about a little bit. But, I mean, the conversation of the future college football playoff format starting in 2026, right, it's going to be at the center of this Big Ten SEC joint meeting. They'll meet for a second time in about a month or so, right before the CFP commissioners meet to discuss a future format. And so Jim was a little ahead of himself a little bit there, but maybe he's just anticipating that this is going to happen. And that leagues will have multiple AQs, and we'll have to have a reimagination of the conference championship weekend.
Yeah, it's a really interesting concept, and I know he's not the only one. The Big 12 was kind of toying with some of these ideas too last year at the, you know, as you said, Ross, when the proposals were coming out for multiple bids, and you know, trying to think, you know, your Mark's wheels were turning of how do we make that championship weekend into something even better, but it doesn't cost us spots. And, you know, some talk even of like semifinals and then a championship or what have you, where you do have 1 versus 4 and 2 versus 3. So there's a lot of, I think, ideas on the table, depending on if we're going to have multiple automatic qualifier bids, which I hate. I dislike the very concept, and I certainly dislike the concept of the Big Ten and the SEC telling everyone what the format's going to be. But I do think those conferences are making plans for, or contingencies at least, for if this is the case, how do we best maximize our championship weekend without costing our best team a shot to play in the playoff?
Yeah, I hate the idea of multiple automatic bids, but this is what they want. I did listen to Joel Klatt, the Fox Sports, Fox lead announcer or analyst, and he was trying to take the subjectivity out of it. With this, he said this would take the committee and make the committee really not that important, because basically there'd be, if you finish top four in the SEC or the Big Ten or the top two, you're in. If not, you're not in. And so I'm a little confused on it, though. You would still have, if you go to 14 teams, again, I just don't like any of this, but you'd still have, so you'd have four. You'd have four from the SEC, four from the Big Ten, two from the ACC, two from the Big 12. So there's 12. And then you'd have one group of five. Then you'd still have this one lone spot that could be Notre Dame or one of the losers, like a fifth place team from somewhere else. But if you set this up where you're playing like three plays, six, let's say it's the SEC, and your one and two is Georgia and Texas. So they play for the title or they sit it out. I mean, the problem is like
automatically advance. Yeah.
Or automatically advance. But if they want inventory, TV inventory, so whatever. Because I get it. If you have four spots, like, why are we playing all this? But you would then have your, all you got to do is be in the top six of your league. You're basically turning this into like a 20 team playoff or 20.
Yeah. You're adding an extra round to the playoff, yeah, basically. Which, yeah.
Yeah.
The play-in style tournament.
All you got to be is top six in your league, and you got a chance to play your way in. Now, in college basketball, which is why the expansion of the NCAA basketball tournament is stupid, everyone already has a way to play in. It's called the conference tournament.
Yeah.
There is a play-in round, and you can lose every single game the entire season. You can go in 0-30. I think Arkansas is trying this year in basketball.
They're going to try. They actually won last night. They won last night.
Oh, I'm sorry. They won. No. You're going to be horrible and then win four games in your conference championship, your conference tournament, and then all six and be the national champ. Like, you just get on a streak. Anyone can do it. So this would be that. I kind of get it. Takes the subject, but then there'd still be the argument of the one spot. And his point, and I kind of get it, was there was so much negativity over who got in that it kind of overshadowed the first round. I hate to hear, like, just because Lane Kiffin's whining and the media is complaining and Alabama fans are upset that we have to change the format to try to appease the complainers.
Yes, that would be a, like, bad response.
Yeah, in my opinion. Just who cares what they're saying?
Yeah.
Like, I love Lane Kiffin and I love his social media accounts, but let's not take it like it has any veracity in anything. He's just spouting off about anything. So the idea is like, well, we better redo the format because these guys are going to complain. They're always going to complain. They're college football coaches. They hate everything. So yeah.
We'll see what happens here. You know, I think a big the athletic directors of the Big Ten and SEC, like I said earlier, had their second joint meeting in New Orleans. They had one in October in Nashville. You know, they've kind of formed this partnership, the Big Ten and SEC, mostly geared around the playoff and then the house settlement future. And this is going to be a big meeting. I think from that meeting, you know, they will kind of agree on a format that they will propose potentially together in the CFP room the next week. And they claim, the Big Ten and SEC, their commissioners, claim that they control, starting in 2026, the future format. They signed a memorandum of understanding last spring with the other leagues, and the other leagues gave them, for the most part, authority over the format with some protections. The five highest ranked conference champions are protected and they get a bid. And Notre Dame gets a bid if it finishes, you know, top 12 if it's a 12 team field, or top 14 if it's a top 14 team field. So there's a couple protections, but outside of that, you know, there's a lot of flexibility in the format. And not everybody agrees that the Big Ten and SEC control it all themselves, but they certainly believe that. And so this is going to be an interesting spring.
It's just, I mean, the whole thing is so objectionable to me and so stupid, but that's where we are. That
that the rest of the league, the rest of the sport has or has not. There's debate over it. We don't know what they did or not give them control. I mean, I fail to understand the lack of understanding there, but I also fail to understand why they would have ceded that control to them to begin with, because who the hell trusts them? I don't, for one.
Because they keep claiming they're gonna go do their own thing. Yeah.
Right. It's right. Like, and that's been, they've said that publicly, right? I mean, I wrote, so you remember, it, along with this MOU that they signed about the future format in 26, and they decided on the revenue distribution, which we've talked about a lot, right? It's weighted heavily toward SEC and Big Ten. They get 59% of all of, together, they get 59% each. Each gets, what is that? Each gets 29%, is that right? Something like that. They get 29% each of the revenue as part of the new deal starting in 2026. And they got that revenue and they got alleged control of the format because, and Greg Sankey and Tony Patini both publicly said it in a story I ran in April, is they threatened to leave. They said, we will leave. And that's kind of where we are right now. And that's where we are with NCAA governance as well.
Yeah. But it's like they can threaten lots of stuff. And I don't want to get to the point where you're like, I dare you. But there's unbelievable backlash against these guys. Patini and Sankey would go down as the two worst leaders in the history of college athletics. I don't care who's leading Congress. There would be absolute bipartisan backlash. You better have some hella lobbyists. Lobbyists.
You're talking about if they leave.
If they leave?
Yeah, try it.
You're bankrupting all these other communities. And you can't just be like, well, this state, like what is, if you're Texas, if you're Ross's buddy, Ted Cruz, right? A&M and Texas, we're just leaving. Well, you just wiped out like 14 communities.
Yeah. No, politically it would be bad. And they know.
And these two would be the worst. You know? Oh, we got a guy from the baseball. He's here to ruin everything. You want to be that guy?
That's, I can't imagine. That's okay, what I truly.
For what purpose?
Yeah.
So,
right.
Like, what? Why?
So that we get another
a couple 13%. Million more.
Yeah.
I mean, like, everything is just a spreadsheet now. You're going down in history as the worst of the worst. Like, literally the worst people in the history of sports. You're going down like that because you just destroyed something everybody likes. For a little bit more money that we can buy buyouts for our defensive coordinator who sucks. I don't want to get to the point, I mean, I dare you, but what are you doing? That's not what Greg Sankey has worked tirelessly to try to improve college. He wants to go down as the biggest villain and the worst person ever. All right. Have fun. Great.
Yeah. That's where I would be sorely tempted to call that bluff because I just can't believe they would do it. And if they do, like you said, then there's no NFL or Major League Baseball owners who could even come close to being as vilified as these guys.
Shut down the baseball. We lost the World Series once or something. Like, you're literally just decimating the entire operation that people have loved for 100 plus years.
Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of people want to call the bluff, right? I remember talking to back in the last spring when they made this revenue sharing agreement and the format that they control the format and they agreed on all this stuff. Mike Oresko came out publicly after he retired and talked to me about this and said he didn't think that they would do it. You know, he thought the CFP should have called their bluff during the negotiations because he didn't think politically that they were going to actually in the end that they would do that. And then we got some FCA right now in a separate conversation about NCAA governance and the future of NCAA governance. We talked about that proposal that the Power Four made, and the SEC is the one that authored it, but the Power Four agreed on to take over the NCAA championships and tournament, have oversight over that. And there's a lot of FCS, right? Commissioners and athletic administrators at the FCS or non-football playing level that have said to me, right, it's time to tell them, this is the end. You can't take over the championships. Go, you know, take your ball and go home. Go ahead and do it. So this is going to be a really interesting spring for a bunch of reasons. Obviously, the House settlement implementation is happening, but there are a lot of folks at their their wits end with the situation when it comes to the threats from
that's
the
what
SEC
you got into
Big
this
Ten.
For I guess have fun, but yeah, I don't know. All right, let's get to important subjects. Okay.
Yeah,
I have a source reached out to me with this bit of news. We'll call him, well, we could call him Deep Tide, but we call him High Tide, right? Isn't that the joke in that commercial? High Tide?
Yeah.
Deep Tide. So is this accurate story? No idea. Absolutely no idea. A-Town Wings. It's a spot to eat down there in Tuscaloosa. Wing joint. Mm-hmm. Ryan Williams. Do you know he's only 17 years old, Pat?
I've heard. He's Alabama. He's got to be 18 by now, doesn't he? I mean,
February 9th.
Holy moly.
Yeah, 17. Wow. Only 17, but he is wise in the way of the wings.
Yeah.
So not only is he an incredible receiver, obviously, for the Crimson Tide, but according to this source, his order at A-Town Wings, at least recently, was lemon pepper all flats. Now you have the drumstick or you have the flats. Okay. And this is the part I want to discuss. What do you think of a guy that's so confident in his wing order? He doesn't want, don't mix it up. Lemon pepper's delicious, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
All flats, Pat. You thought of that?
You know, I mean, I'm usually live and let live. I eat what I get. I'm happy with the drumsticks. I'm happy with the flats. I'm perfectly fine with the combination thereof. But, you know, if a man feels strongly that that's that is the proper way to ingest wings, what'd you say, wise in the way of the wings? Yeah, so... you know what? I mean, he's certainly got enough clout in that town. He can get his flats. Get his flats. He can get this worked into his NFL contract eventually when he goes pro. I will only eat flat wings.
Like rock bands. They're like, they have the Riders, right? When they come to the...
Right.
There's a blue M&M in that bowl. You're right.
Yeah.
Right. All right. Flats. Ross, your thoughts?
I'm against this. I'm a meat eater, Dan. I want as much meat as possible. And the drumstick gives you more meat. The flats are more skin and fat and all that. I want just the meat, and you get more from the drumstick. So flats are good and all, but don't give me all flats. No.
I'm more of a variety guy, but I applaud this because this is a guy who knows what he wants.
Yeah.
At a young age, 17 years old.
Yeah.
Just 17. Just
17. Yeah. And he knows what he wants, and he makes a bold and decide. This is like him running routes, man. He's coming right at you, and then bang, cut. He knows where he's going. Ryan Williams, good job.
But good job. If maybe this is a sign of like the culture problem of Alabama football, that they're getting they're too picky down there under Kalen DeBoer.
No, this is knowing what you want. There's nothing wrong with all flats. It's not like there's a negative to it.
There's something wrong with Alabama football. We might as well blame it on the wing choices.
Listen,
they're blaming it on everything else. They're blaming it on Kalen DeBoer wearing a T-shirt.
Is this story even true? Don't know. That's true. If that is not your order, well, I think I like a decisive 17-year-old. I like a decisive move. So good job on that. All right, finally, last story we just got to get to here. This one is this is a people's court because it actually went to court. Went to court. The Colorado Supreme Court made a ruling this week. There was a petition that five elephants at a Colorado zoo should have the legal right to pursue a release from the zoo, from the Cheyenne Mountain Zoo in Colorado Springs, Pat.
Yeah. That's my hometown. I've been to that zoo 150 times.
That was probably like fourth grade Pat 40 on the school trip.
I actually got a zoo story for you. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, there's five elephants there, Missy, Kimba, Lucky, Lulu, and Jambo. And the ruling was they could have pursued a legal process that allows prisoners. Okay. Also, Pat might know some things about being a Colorado prisoner. I don't know. We don't know what his background. No background check here on the College Football Inquirer. Prisoners to challenge their detention, and if they won that challenge, so should the elephants be able to follow the path of a prisoner and challenge their detention, get that detention, and then they could have been transferred to an elephant sanctuary somewhere. And so this was a lawsuit brought by the Non-Human Rights Project. And the Colorado Supreme Court ruled no, they cannot, they do not have the legal right of a prisoner because they're not human.
Seems like a pretty key distinction there, you know?
Yeah. But the court, already scared, said that does not turn on our regard for these majestic animals. Instead, the legal question here boils down to whether an elephant is a person. And because an elephant is not a person, the elephants here do not have the standing to bring a habeas corpus claim. Pat, do you agree?
Well,
it's the stupidest thing I've ever heard of.
Yeah, I want to see the elephant represent itself in court since we're or at least take the witness stand.
Let me tell you what, if Lulu or Lucky show up in the courtroom, I'm giving him whatever he wants. That thing
serving as his own attorney.
Yeah, right. I'm representing myself here. So no, this is completely absurd. But I do have to say, look, we have to look out for our animal welfare at the Cheyenne Mountain Zoo because on a seventh grade field trip there, one of my friends who shall remain nameless did punch a giraffe in the neck.
What? So
he's like,
how do you reach a giraffe's neck?
Well, the giraffe comes to you. They come to you. They eat out of your hand.
Yeah,
they
come right over. There's a lot of neck to hit. It's a big target.
It's a big neck, but it's a strong neck, as he found out.
He just punched the giraffe in the neck? That's not good.
Yes. No, it was bad. It was bad. He thought he was funny. We might have laughed at the time, but we all eventually had remorse.
You definitely laughed.
We had remorse for this after
15-year-olds cutting up at the zoo.
My friend initials J period E period.
Pat was 15 in the seventh grade. Held back a few times. This delinquent. No.
I mean, there's not much on earth dumber than a seventh grade boy. And my friend decided it was time to punch a perfectly well-meaning giraffe that's just trying to eat out of our hands.
Terrible story. I do feel for these guys. They're stuck in a zoo. I mean,
it's not, ideal, but
getting
still
punched by a seventh grader.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think it did any damage, though. I've been around. I was at the World Cup in South Africa. I saw some giraffes up close, and those things, not even Tyson in seventh grade.
Yeah.
Was going to hurt that thing. Yeah. But I was at a thing with they were the giraffe was there. The giraffes were coming over to eat. And guess who showed up? But Dikembe Mutombo.
Really?
Yeah, he was there to watch the World Cup, and he showed up at our thing. And it was
he could reach the neck.
Well, yeah, they were like looking eye to eye. We're like, what does this giraffe think of Dikembe? Like this guy, like he's like giraffe's looking at the rest of us. Like, okay, I've seen this.
The giraffe wants to pet him.
Yeah, like Dikembe's like staring him down. Like, no. You feed me. I don't know. It was like, wow, this is crazy. Ross, you got a thought on this?
No, not really. No.
The group, the Non-Human Rights Project, I mean, it's really, I give them credit for throwing the Hail Mary here. As with other social justice movements, early losses are expected as we challenge the entrenched status quo that has allowed Missy, Kimba, Lucky, Lulu, and Jambo to be relegated to a lifetime of mental and physical suffering. That could be true. I'm not a big zoo fan, but whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're not human.
That's it's tough to argue their case in court. I mean, you can say you know what the elephant is feeling, but do you really?
So, maybe they like it there. There's no predators.
They might. Yeah. Right.
You know. I don't know.
On the Serengeti, waiting for a lion to jump on your back.
Hard to say. But anyway, that's where we're at. Colorado. Someone got after that legal weed in the lawyer's office. Decided to. How does this? What does the judge think when this pops across their desk?
I can't imagine. At least they found a deft way to at least express their empathy for the animal, the majestic animal.
Majestic animal. All right.
But the ruling is hell no, right?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, it's because an elephant is not a person. I mean, it's pretty pretty sound.
Kind of ends it.
The legal minds of Colorado. All right. Thank you for our show. We'll be back. Team 6 through 10 next time. Maybe. Unless we do something else. We probably will do. Because what else are we going to do? We will talk to you later.